So the Browns delivered us two lumps of coal for Christmas, but I'm not going to cry about it. Here's why. Nick Chubb, happy birthday, by the way. The D can hold its own, and no matter who's in there, we're competitive. So tell us what happened on Christmas Day. 2-0 to go. Woo, woo, woo.
Welcome to the Dogs Podcast with your hosts, Blake Reniker, Zach Kopp, Justin Charles, and Josh All.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Dogs. If you'd like to get your intro in the show, head to thedogspodcast.com, tap leave voicemail on the drop-down menu. Thanks to Kenny Mack, as always, for another awesome intro. As you can see, we got Zach back in the house today.
All right.
Good to see Zachary here. Justin, you know, one day we're going to get us all four back in again. But at least we were able to get Zach today.
Right.
Browns, tough defeat on Christmas Day. But as Kenny Mack said, there's still slight glimmer of hope. Before we get into everything, though, remember to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find us on TikTok. We're on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Make sure you tap the notification bell so you never miss a new episode. You can also find us on Apple, Spotify, Google if you prefer to just listen. Lastly, if you want to be a member of the Dog Pack, our Patreon page, you need some more content, head to jointhedogs.com. Become an official Dog Pack member on our Patreon page. The fantasy seasons are wrapping up. I'm happy to say that a dog from each league made it to the championship. So we represented ourselves well in both of those fantasy leagues. And it's good for the people they're playing too, because now win or lose in the championship, those guys are getting they're getting dogs merch.
Congratulations.
Right. Yeah, so good for them. And just big shout out to the Patreon in general. They made this football season super fun. It's not over yet. But, you know, about 200 text messages a day, nonstop football, 24/7. If you want to talk football pretty much all the time, join the Patreon page. There's a lot of cool stuff in there.
So this season's been up and down, and there's been some brutal moments. But having that community to turn to is really – it's been good for us.
Yeah, it's therapeutic at times. Yes. At other times, we want to kill each other, but it's pretty much just sports fandom. So check it out, jointhedogs.com. It's a ton of fun. Become an official Dog Pack member on the Patreon page. So like I mentioned in the open, Browns suffer another tough defeat, 24-22 at the hands of the Packers on Christmas Day. No Christmas miracle for us. It's crazy. The last two losses have been by a combined 4 points for the Browns. It's a game of inches.
Yeah.
Sucks real bad. The only reason, you know, I'm much less depressed after this game than I was last week, though, basically for the reason of, one, I expected us to lose this game.
Yeah.
Two, I don't know if I could have been more depressed than I was after last week's loss. And then three, after last week's loss, I thought the season was essentially over, and we just lost two in a row and somehow are still very much alive to win the AFC North. It's very crazy. So I'm still hopeful despite just the constant kick in the nads this season has been.
Yep.
But let's go ahead and dive into this game. Once again, the defense comes in huge, holds an offense that has been pretty much dominating everybody to 24 points. They didn't do anything in the second half. 3 points in the second half. I think, what'd you have it, Zach? You still got it pulled up?
Let me see. Yeah, it was 3 points.
So 3 points in the second half. They didn't even hardly run any plays in the second half.
No, it was, I tell you what, our defense, it just keeps doing it.
We kept playing Davante Adams single coverage in the red zone in the first half.
The first half was so good.
It made no sense. But then it was good to see. It's like they went into halftime and they looked at the film on their surface and they were like, wait, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Why are we doing it like this? And then they came out in the second half and switched some things up. And we shut them down. It was the only reason we even had a chance in this game was because of the defense.
Yeah, they went so – it was 21-12 at halftime, and then they got the ball coming out of the half and went on an 11-play, 76-yard drive to get a field goal, which felt like a win because it was almost like they get a touchdown here. It's definitely over. So defense stepped up, and then they had one, two, three, four more drives the rest of the game, three playing out, five playing out, and then to end the game. So, I mean, defense did their job in the second half. First half, I don't know what we were doing with the Davante Adams thing. And I think we had like count on him at one point in the, and like you could even see it happen. Like as somebody who's kind of watched fantasy wise of Devontae Adams, you could almost tell, oh, he's single covered in the slot on a backup or a rookie safety. That's probably who Aaron Rodgers is going to go to.
Well, and in the first half, I kept thinking they kind of do this to everybody except for like maybe Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too perturbed, but I was like, can we make this maybe just a tiny bit tougher on them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Can we make it not so elementary for this guy? And then in the second half we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, all game long too. Defensively, we shut down the run game. I mean, Aaron Jones is having a pretty good season, and then
so is AJ Dillon.
Yep. You know, to hold those guys, I mean, they ended up having a decent average, but only giving up 109 yards, I think, total, because I think Alan Lazard had like a 13 or 14 yard carry, something like that. But holding them to those numbers is a win, you know, most weeks.
Well, I will say this. It kind of reminds me. So they had 12 carries for Aaron Jones, only 9 carries for AJ Dillon. And you would think like their fans are probably going, we should have been running the ball. But it's kind of like what happens to the Browns when if you try to run it on first down and you don't get anything, you're probably not going to run it again on second and long.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? So then all of a sudden you at the end of the game, you realize my top two backs only had 21 carries. 12, if my math is right. Yeah. 21. And it's kind of like the same thing that happens to the Browns when people are like Chubb isn't getting near enough carries. Well, you're probably not going to run it on second and 12.
Mm-hmm.
So defense did another great job. It was nice to have some people back. MJ Stewart can't cover anybody, but man, he plays hard and he tackles.
I was going to say, he's definitely not your starter material or anything like that, but I think for stepping up in a tough spot these last few weeks, he's been okay.
He's the type of guy that for me, if you were going up against the Browns and he was on your defense, he'd be a guy that'd be like a playmaker that's like against a run heavy team that's not afraid to step up and mm-hmm. make that tackle on like a running, because there was one play, AJ Dillon's a big dude, and I think he caught like a swing pass towards the sideline and it was for a short game. MJ Stewart knocked him on his rear end. I mean, you don't see that much from a safety. So I agree. Last year we talked about MJ Stewart a lot for some bad things, and I'll give him credit. He played well enough that it wasn't like, oh my gosh, MJ Stewart's on the field, we're going to get killed.
So I watched the Packers Ravens game last week, and our friend Robert Jackson still just giving up touchdown catches. Okay. Like they were talking about him, like, oh, Robert Jackson just, yeah, I'm like, we've seen this before. MJ Stewart has bounced back this, and we saw glimpses last year where he was definitely the better of those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's a reason why he was back and Robert Jackson wasn't, but he's made strides this year. He kind of gives me Buster Skrine vibes. I don't know if you guys remember.
Oh yeah. Buster.
So Buster Skrine, when he was first in Cleveland, I thought this is the worst defensive back in the history of professional football.
Yeah, ended up having a nice career even after still playing Cleveland.
Yep. And then I was like, there's no way this guy should be on the team next year. And then they brought him back, and I was like, oh my God. And he was like a great defensive back for us. And then we let him go, and he went on to play on some pretty good defenses, and he's still in the league playing. So good for MJ Stewart. It was nice to have Anthony Walker back. 9 total tackles. JOK obviously had another good game. Greedy Williams, I just like Greedy this year. I'm so pumped for him coming back and again played another full game, again still healthy. I just don't think you can say enough about the Browns defense, especially with no Clowney going up against a guy like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Miles played. I mean, Miles was non-existent. Played with, you know, the groin problem. I'm honestly surprised he played. He had one tackle. I don't even know how many plays he played. Do we have that or no?
Let me look.
he was. I think at one point you texted and said, "Is Miles even on the field, or has his name even been mentioned?"
Yeah, that's what I asked you.
And it's one of those things, I guess, you know, we talked about this earlier in the season when Baker was a little bit more banged up, and it was, if you're out there, you got to perform. If Miles is out there, I need more than one tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially with Clowney not being there, if you're going to take up a spot on the defense, you got to do something.
Now, the only thing I will say is the argument for that is, I guess, like 60% Myles Garrett is probably still better than whoever our fifth defensive end is.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Because
we didn't Clowney have a lot of depth out to begin with.
Exactly. Yeah. So that, I guess that's the counter argument, but I guess that's only two less than he's had the last couple of games.
Yeah, right. It's not like he's much lower.
You know what I mean? So it's just, I thought if he was going to be out there, he would at least make his presence felt a little bit more. I think that groin's a problem. I really do think it is. I think I wouldn't be shocked if the Bengals come out and beat KC, which would eliminate us. I would be shocked if Miles plays on Monday. I think the only reason he's still playing is because we got something to play for.
Yeah, and I guess you're right, because we don't play till Monday, so we'll know.
We'll know if our game Monday is for a chance for the division championship, or if we're just playing for pride.
Yep.
So let's just hope. I've never been a bigger Kansas City fan. So that's kind of the good of the game. I think we touched on that. Well, I mean, if we shift sides to the offensive side of the ball, Nick Chubb had another great game, 17 carries, 126 yards, 7.4 yards per carry. Dearness Johnson, 4 carries, 58 yards, 14.5 yards per carry. We ran the ball 25 times for 219 yards. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad day at the office running the ball.
No, especially when you look at what was the average? Our average?
8.8 yards per carry total if you count Schwartz's two runs and Baker's two runs.
Yep. Yep. That's pretty good.
So I think, and it kind of sounds like we're going to be beating a dead horse here, but then if you didn't watch the game, you're new to football, and you're listening into this podcast, you're going, Browns must have won this game. Nope, we lost. And why did we lose? We lost because they scored 21 of their 24 points off of 3 Baker Mayfield interceptions.
And won the game at the end on a fourth.
Yes. And potential. I mean, there was littered throughout the game other dropped. I mean, he was flirting with 7.
Was it 7?
Yes.
I know it was at least 6, yeah.
Yeah, it was
a bad, bad game. It was a bad game.
Yeah, and it was just, and we've seen Baker, like, in his past, try to, like, throw into a double coverage and throw an interception or just, like, make the wrong read at times. Two of these were just awful.
Yeah, so 4 picks. The one at the very end was so obvious, should have been a pass interference. So obvious. So I'm going to give him some leeway there, okay? But the first 3, I know the first one there should have been defensive holding, but if he could read the defense, he had a guy wide open at 20 yards on a crossing route, and instead he threw it into double coverage, and he might be able to come out and say, well, the guy got held at 50. I'm not buying that 5'10" Baker saw that hold over the line. You know what I mean? I'm not buying that. And it gave me flashbacks of when Odell was here. Like that crossing route that was wide open.
It was probably Odell.
That used to be Odell.
Yeah.
And he'd be wide open. Instead, he's watching the ball go over his head into double coverage and getting picked off. So some people are letting him off the hook there. I'm not. Because if the ball goes to the right place, that guy's still running right now. He's still going. He ran from Wisconsin back to Cleveland because there was nobody around him. Nobody.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing that I kind of saw in that play and just like some different replays that I've seen, because everywhere you've seen after this game, the Browns are one of the most talked about teams in the NFL.
Oh yeah,
everybody loves either hating on the Browns or like when they're playing good, everybody's like, oh, they're Super Bowl contender. And on that play, you had a couple of different things get broken down. One, you had some people saying, oh, look, there was a penalty here, and one, Baker threw that ball, and if there's a flag thrown. I mean, if he would have saw it, because it wasn't like he threw a 20-yard pass and he saw it at 15 yards and he threw it to him quick. I mean, it was a bomb 40 yards down the field. He saw it at
10 yards and then waited another 3 seconds
to throw it.
Yeah.
I think, personally, what happened on that play, if Baker was being truly honest, is the safety who was following one of the crossing routes across the field then broke off and went with the deep guy. I think Baker had no idea that safety jumped that route and got on top of the wide receiver. I think he thought he had one-on-one coverage with DPJ, had the cornerback beat. it was the safety who was over the top that was in perfect position to make the interception. I think Baker just had no idea that that guy dropped back and was there.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally 100% agree. And it was like he threw the pick and he was mad. And then somebody was like, hey, there should have been holding. And he was like, wait, yeah, there was holding. you know what I mean?
Right.
You saw his reaction.
Right.
So that was that. I heard some people too, like, because the refs were bad in this game. Wyatt Teller getting called for a false start. I went back and watched that play so many times. I cannot figure out who they called false start on the Browns.
Yeah, because it wasn't him.
It was not. It was. Oh, I cannot figure it out.
It shouldn't have been on us at all.
It should have been offsides on their defensive lineman.
Yes, and I know the play was like, I forget what it was. It wasn't like it was going to give us the first down. I think it might have been like a 3rd and 17 or
yeah, it was it
a
long.
4th down? It might have been a 4th down. And
it was because we were going to go for it.
We were going to go for it.
It was 4th and 22, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they said, because the announcers were like, oh, I guess that 5 yards just changed the mind.
Right. You're right.
It's like 4th and 27.
Yeah, so I have no idea. And in my head, there's other quarterbacks in this league that thrive on, they get that offsides and then they blow the play dead. And then I was like, oh, they at least we're going to get 5. No. And then they called it on us. I couldn't believe, especially with like the sky judge now that was like, hey, no, that was offsides clearly on the other team.
I went back and I watched on my phone. I kept rewinding it like, well, maybe I'm just not seeing something. And I kept like slowed the playback. There's nobody. Nobody. And then I've heard some people saying they're mad that Stefanski like doesn't blow up on the officials.
Right.
And I'm like, the same people who were praising him because he never gets too high or never gets too low last year now want him to berate. That's not who he is.
Yeah. If you want
to love him for it, for one thing, and then the next day want him to be cussing out the officials.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's kind of both sides to that. Me personally, I'd like to see my coach get a little bit fired up. Like, we've seen Mike Tomlin and like throughout, because we play him, you know, Sean twice a year. Those guys, those type of coaches, they get fired up and they let the official know.
Matt Nagy almost got kicked out of a game.
Yeah, like when they've made a mistake. And sometimes that works to your benefit. But like Blake said, I just don't think Stefanski is that type of guy.
And we applauded him for it last year because the team followed suit and we kept winning all these close games. And it was like, they're taking on the mentality of their coach. They're always just, you know, the next play, the next play, the next play. And now there's people mad that he doesn't break. Come on, guys. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. And it's not like it's not like this is high school basketball where it's like you get on the official and then you get the foul call the next time down the floor.
Right.
If anything, they're going to go the opposite way and just swallow the whistle even more.
Right.
You know, just another perspective on it too. Like, What good's it going to do for Stefanski to get all upset with the refs? Because I imagine somewhere in his mind, he thinks the refs shouldn't be affecting the outcome of my game anyway. We should not be in this position. And that's where I was at the whole game. Like, okay, yeah, the refereeing was terrible. It was awful. But it was just like in the Chargers game earlier in the year, you know, when Mike Williams was holding the jersey of
and they called it on
whoever
us.
I forget who the receiver was.
I think it was DPJ.
Was it DPJ? Yeah, and they called it on us. Yeah, and it was like, well, that just, you know, totally ruined that drive. It's like, well, that's one play. It shouldn't have mattered. Or we should be able to overcome that. We shouldn't put ourselves in a situation where a bad call here and there derails the game for us.
Correct.
Right.
And that comes down to having to be with Baker. Everything we have to coach perfect, play perfect. That no one was never. If every coach coached perfect, every player did their perfect job on every play, and it was just a picture perfect play every time, the world would explode.
Nobody would lose
because it would be an immovable object against an immovable force or whatever. Nothing would ever happen in football. That doesn't happen.
Correct.
So you got to be able to overcome some of that stuff. It shouldn't. Your game shouldn't make or break on that.
So, you know, for the people that want to defend, you know, okay, the last interception, I'll give you that was a terrible call. He was getting interfered
right
because
yeah,
everything.
If he doesn't do that, and DPJ at least has got his hands on the ball.
And I'm totally with you with what you said about okay, yeah, there was, you know, the holding on the first one, but he still made a bad throw.
Yeah.
What about the one that hit the guy in the chest and he just dropped it?
Right.
I mean, and I'm not talking about at the end of the game, like earlier in the second half.
Yeah.
It was a clean pick. The guy just dropped the ball.
Baker gets the benefit of that a lot. And people say, like, our receivers drop passes? Well, it's kind of because Baker has one speed on his throw, and we're kind of lucky. Or else he'd have 10 more picks this year.
I think some of these DBs get hit in the hands or the chest with a pass, and they're like, oh, I didn't know he's going to throw it to me.
Correct. Right. Like, at 100 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's why they're playing defense and not offense type of thing. Yeah, because there was another one. I mean, I think I know which one you're talking about, and it was one of their cornerbacks dropped. I mean, perfect pass right to him, mm-hmm. and he dropped it. And then there was another one where one of their defensive linemen played the screen really well and like stepped back, and Baker threw it right at him.
At the end of the game, right before he threw the ball.
Threw it right at him. I mean,
it was set up nice too.
That guy could have picked that, and that's a pick. I mean, he's gone.
Yep.
If he scores.
Baker would probably try to like jump into him, spear and break his neck.
Hit him with that left shoulder.
Yeah. So we've touched on two of the interceptions. The other two, no excuses for. The throw to Jarvis. Oh, my God, dude. That is not...
It almost was so bad, right? It was so bad, and it was like a Lamar Jackson duck type of a throw that we've seen, and we've like, Lamar can't throw. It looked like one of those throws where it was like, that ball had to be tipped at the line.
F it. Somebody's down there.
It felt like just seeing it come out of his hand was like almost the motion of the ball just looked like it had to have been tipped. And then you see it, nobody even close.
Nope. It was so bad. I mean, I remember too, I was watching and I just, this guy.
Yeah.
I just looked.
And Jarvis is wide open.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been on a third down. I want to say it was on a third down. I know I'd have to go back. I had to pull it up and look. Huge play in the game because we were in field goal range.
Yeah.
Now, another thing.
Nagar have made it.
Another thing that we'd have to get to. But I'm pretty sure that it was in field goal range to where we were going to be able to at least put points on the board when we needed to.
And then the third one. Which one was the third one?
There were I'm having trouble too remembering them. There were so many.
That play, it was third and 19, and Jarvis was near the first down. I don't know if we'd have got it, but we were on the 24. So we were looking at a 40-yard field goal. If Jarvis catches it, we're probably going for it for like fourth and three at the 10-yard line.
Correct.
Something like that. And then the third interception was on like our last real drive before halftime. And it was the one where he was looking for Jarvis again on a deep pass.
Oh, down the sideline. Yeah, and he just like threw it. And here's the thing too, where we've talked about this in the Patreon group a little bit. A lot of people are saying Baker's going to be back next year just because of we picked up his fifth year option. Stefanski came out after the game and said there is some miscommunication there, but he thinks Baker probably knows he should have just thrown that one away. I think there's disconnect behind the scenes. I really don't think those two click. That just didn't seem like a Stefanski thing. That didn't seem like something he would have said last year about Baker.
It's so crazy because I don't know. That's my biggest thing is like, we just don't know. And I feel like as the fan base and like we're a year into this, it's not like, oh, Baker struggled the last couple of weeks and everybody's like trying to figure everything out. I honestly don't know if the Browns want him to be the guy or they don't want him to be the guy. Like, do they care about the injury or they're just like, he's injured this year. We'll evaluate him next year. We got plenty of time, on our hand. Like, is that with their mindset? Because I honestly don't know the answer to that.
The fact, I mean, people are saying, they keep putting him out there. The fact that they keep putting him out there to me tells me the injury is not that big of a deal. Because here's the thing, whether they like him or not, they're not
going to ruin his life.
Yeah, right? They're not going to ruin, they're not going to put him in danger. You know what I mean? Any more than what football is. And it tells me he's making the throws in practice and stuff like that. And I just think there's a disconnect behind the scenes. I don't think he's Stefanski's guy. I don't even know if he's Andrew Berry's guy, and they didn't draft him.
Mm-mm.
So this thought that he's just automatically going to be back because we picked up his option, I think that was like, hey, we picked up your option. Go have a good season. We'll talk extension. But
it's going to be that interesting thing. So obviously, if we bring we obviously are bringing Baker back for his, and we're on the hook, for his $18 million. That doesn't mean that we have to. We'd either have to cut him.
Or trade.
Keep him as a backup and just not start him, and so be it. You're on the roster for the year, or he asks for a trade and we trade him to somebody and get a super late round pick or some practice squad player for him.
I think if you're trading Baker, you're getting more in a late round.
You think? After this year?
Yes, because look at what Sam Darnold did, looking like total dog crap the last couple of years.
True.
And the Panthers took a swing at him.
They got a fourth or a third, or a third and a fourth.
But I think that there's a lot of people, like that. In Sam Darnold's defense, thought, oh, it's Adam Gase, it's Adam Gase, true. It's Adam Gase.
True. A lot of people
where Baker's this. Coming from.
It's
a QB.
Yeah, but people system. Might look at it and say, oh, it's Cleveland.
Right. I mean, they could. I mean, I know that we're like super optimistic about everything, but from the outside looking in, people are probably like, stupid Browns fans thought that they were going to be something. Can't they remember they only won a game like 3 years ago? They were awful type of a thing. I think with the Baker, it's one of those things. So I think it was Dan Orlovsky. He's been a Baker guy all year long. And I think even since he came in, like, he's been a Baker defender. He was on, I think it was the Pat McAfee show that I saw a clip that he was on there and called in. And he said that any other QB on the Browns roster would have won that game, is in his eyes, how he felt.
Who said that?
Dan Orlovsky. So,
and Dan is a huge Baker guy, has been since day one.
Yeah, so he's saying that. Now, he said in there, I'm still a Baker guy. I still believe in Baker. He thinks that the injury isn't causing him to make as many mistakes as he is. He says Baker has to be better, but he thinks the injury has something to do with it. And he said in that he even doesn't know if it's going to be up to the organization. We're going to find out. Are they really with Baker? We'll see going into next year, because they've already picked up their option. So he was kind of in that same boat of like, we're going to find out who, based on who they bring in. Do they just draft some rookie in the draft that we've talked about, you know, isn't great? This isn't the QB, like, to go look for your franchise QB for the next 15 years. This isn't that draft.
Mm-hmm.
So if they go that route and they don't bring anybody else in, Baker's our guy next year type of a thing. But, or if they're aggressive and they go get a, throw out this name because Blake loves him, Gardner Minshew type of a guy, you know, and bring him in, makes you think, okay, this is, you know, really up for grabs. They're not sold on Baker. So, I mean, we're all going to see. Obviously, Baker can kind of, as bad as the year has been, if he comes out and balls out in the last two games and the Browns somehow make the playoffs and he ends the season playing well, that taste in everybody's mouth is going to be a little bit different than it was, you know, this week.
If we somehow win the division, the problem is if we somehow...
Even if we win the division...
There's still many problems. Question marks.
Yes. Yeah, there's still problems, but... If he comes out and let's say he throws for 300 yards in these averages, 300 yards these last two games, is thrown at 75% and six touchdowns and no interceptions, people are going to be like, ah, oh, that's the Baker, you know, we saw last year. And people are going to be at least optimistic about it.
You know what's crazy to me, too, is I was thinking about this weekend. Baker struggled in two games against the Ravens, okay? Joe Burrow
lights up the Ravens.
he threw for 500 this Sunday. In two games against the Ravens, he has almost a third amount of the yards that Baker has for the whole season.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In now, two games against the Ravens.
Now, how did you guys, okay, so a little bit off topic, but it kind of in division, how did you guys feel about like everything that kind of came out after that game
about their defensive coordinator saying they weren't going to buy a gold jacket for him yet and stuff?
Okay.
That.
So that kind of started it, but the fact of it was the fourth quarter, they're up by 50 and they're still throwing the ball. And I mean, and Joe Burrow and them came out and said, no sympathy for him. Don't care that they have, that we're up big. We keep playing until the end.
They said they did it to us last year.
Right. So,
I definitely don't have sympathy because the Ravens were winning a game earlier this year, and instead of taking a knee, they ran a play with Lamar to get their record.
Right.
So it couldn't have happened to a better franchise.
Yeah. I personally liked it because you're in the NFL. This is a professional sport. If you don't want me to throw on you, stop me.
I've seen Tom Brady still out there when they're up like 180.
Yeah.
So, wham.
But yeah, I liked it though. And I liked that. Yeah, I saw the Jamar Chase like in the locker room, like not going to double team who? And then he was like going over to T. Higgins, like, well, what'd you have today? He's like $179 and 2 TDs. So that was nice. One of the teams we got to beat the end of the year. But
I know.
We've had their number. Don't know why.
Call me crazy, but I have faith in our defense.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was because our defense has shown us that they can do it.
We talked about this on After Hours last week. I think you had to bring Joe Woods back now.
Yeah, I think he's done enough.
We haven't given up more than like 20. 24 is the most we've given up in a long time.
And that was
three turnovers.
That was to the Packers, who were heavily aided by our quarterback.
Right, yeah. And it was – we still had guys that it kind of gets lost in – you know, this game because there's so many other things. We still had a lot of guys out with COVID.
Yeah.
Like, not huge numbers, but like big name type guys.
Clowney's a big loss.
Yeah. I mean, Clowney hasn't played well, but like even like a Mac Wilson and just some of the guys that are usually on the field for us that produce were out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, John Johnson, we didn't have him. So it's.
If I go look at this real quick, we gave up 24 to the Packers. That's the most points we've given up.
And it was 22 to the Ravens because I think it was 24-22 the Ravens.
We lost. We gave up 24 to the Packers, and that's the most we've given up since the Patriots, and that was 45. If you go past that, we haven't given up. The last time we gave up above 24 was the Cardinals and the Patriots. So we've only given – I mean, Cardinals was – early.
Yeah, that was early on. It was what, week like 4 or 5, something like that. Yes. I mean, it was super early.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. In our last 10 games, we've only given up 24 or more twice.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Woods has definitely done a better job on the defensive end. Now, there's still some things that we could obviously, I think, do better. Still don't think we get enough pressure on the quarterback
100%
ever.
100% agree.
You know, I think that there, and whether that's the talent that we have, obviously, Miles, but he gets double teamed a lot.
I don't know if you listened to the show last week, but we said that Miles has not lived up to what he needs to be doing.
Oh, no, I agree. I don't think that he has either. And for people that like kind of said that we were crazy for thinking we'd take TJ Watt over Miles Garrett in a heartbeat, you're crazy for not. I mean, TJ Watt gets triple teamed almost on every single play he gets like the guard and the tackle, and either a tight end or a running back chips him. And he still gets to the quarterback.
Still leads the league in sacks, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. We said Miles coming into this game, he has 15 sacks on the season, 5 in 1 game.
Yeah.
So that means he has 10 in now his other 14 games.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's still our best guy when it comes to on the line, but you could argue that like somebody like Clowney isn't too far off in the pay differences like hundreds of millions of dollars, it seems like. So I agree. I don't think that Garrett has up to it.
You get your one sack per game, that's great. What'd you do the other 50 plays?
Right. Yeah. Well, and
he has 7 tackles the last 3 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is noticeable. We saw it last year, and then it was like, oh, it was COVID, you know, that he was struggling coming back from COVID, where we were like, where's Miles at? You shouldn't have to think that about your best player. You know, when I watch a Dallas Cowboys game, I'm never like, oh, where's Micah Parsons? Haven't seen him.
Yeah, right.
And he's a rookie.
Yeah.
Like, haven't seen him in a while. Or where's Joey Bosa at? Haven't heard his name.
Where's Aaron Donald?
Yeah.
Haven't heard his name in a while, since last play.
Which I saw a play. I was watching the red zone this week, and he almost took a handoff in the backfield.
That dude plays on the interior. And so he's getting triple teamed.
Yeah.
And he has more of an impact on a play-per-play basis than Miles does.
Yep.
And when Khalil Mack was at the height, or Von Miller, you never wondered where they were.
Right.
Even if they weren't getting sacks, you felt them every play. It was like, he's this far away from just changing this game. You know it's about to happen. Miles disappears for quarters, sometimes games at a time.
Yeah.
So he is, in my opinion, an elite athlete. Is he an elite edge rusher? I don't know if he's an elite edge rusher. He's an above average, very good pass rusher. I don't know if he's elite.
Right. No, I would agree.
I think the elite, there's like five or six in that class, and I don't know if he's in that class.
And he can't have the excuse of being young anymore.
No, he's been doing this.
He's on his second contract.
Yeah, he can't.
Let's go. A big one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think that obviously our defense, like we said, is tremendously improved, but there's still things that could be better.
Yes.
You know, whether it's coverage at times or game planning for the other team's best player at times, where it just like the whole Davante Adams thing just was mind-blowing in the first half to me.
Yeah, you're right. There's definitely things that the defense could, you know, work on and clean up a little bit. But at the same time, they're playing game-winning football.
Yes.
I mean, a good teams with that kind of defense win games.
Yeah.
No question. And what was this stat I saw the other day? It said that the Browns have played 10 games this season that have been decided by 7 points or less, and we're 4-6 in those games. So if we even win half of those games that we lost, so instead of being 4-6, we'd be, 7-3, we would be 10-5. Is that right? Am I doing my math right on the year?
Yeah, I think.
That's first place in the division.
Yeah.
And it's not that far out of the realm of possibility, you know? Like, I know we're Raiders. super down, obviously, because of, we expected so much. We expected to be there and be like, oh, we could have had a couple more, and we're sitting at 10-5, and, you know, we'd all be, looking ahead. And now we're like, well, we need some help. We got to have this team and this team win. But there's so many games where we just haven't been in that position, I feel like, in a long time of, having to have that perfect fourth quarter or that, you know, no turnovers in this offensive game and you win type of a thing. And it sucks.
You know what drives me crazy too, which we're going to get to a voicemail here in a second, but people who say it takes a long time to turn around your crap franchise, and that's part of their reason why they're mad that we get down on Baker. The Bengals drafted Joe Burrow, showed promise last year till he got hurt. He comes back this year healthy. They're in first place in the division with 2 weeks to go. It does not take years to turn your franchise around. It takes one good pick, one good guy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because once you get that one position done, once quarterback is figured out, everything else becomes a luxury. I mean, hey, they had T. Higgins last year as a rookie who was showing hey, this could be a number one receiver on the team. They turn around and draft Jamar Chase this year.
Yeah, now they have.
Because they don't have to worry about their quarterback.
Yeah. This last tweet I'll read before we go to the voicemail said, first it was the Hugh Jackson Haley and Todd Haley's fault. Then it was Freddie Kitchens' fault. Then it was the narrative that OBJ was hurting the Browns and made Baker a worse player. Now it's Stefanski and the play calling. Come on. There's one common denominator here.
Yeah. I can understand back when we had one excuse and then maybe we had a second one, but then as more and more excuses start being made, you're right. You do have to step back and say, okay, hang on a second. We're continually making new excuses for the same problem.
Baker Mayfield's like the Taylor Swift of the football world. You know, she keeps writing all these songs about all these
it's
guys
never her.
Who are scumbags. And then eventually you're like, wait, maybe you're the problem. That's Baker Mayfield.
Oh, man.
Well, we do have a voicemail we want to get to from one of our Patreon members. Before we do that, though, I want to remind you guys to check out Symbol. Head to dogs.symbol.app, new website for them. Take you straight to the page that explains how to use our promo code DAWGS, DAWGS. You're going to use that promo code, create your account on the website. It's going to give you $10 free, plus whatever you deposit into your account is 100% refundable, up to $500 for the first 90 days. So if you put in $50, $100, $200, you play the stock market, you're not enjoying it, you lose all your money, one thing or another, just reach out to Symbol. They'll send you all your money back. It's 100% risk-free. Jump on there, buy shares of stock in different teams. As their price goes up, you're going to make more money. You want to buy low, sell high. Do your research. It's a fun way to make some money. basically just paying attention to sports, which you guys all do anyways. Also, every time they win, however many shares you have of that team, you get an instant cash payout. So if you own 100 shares of the Browns, it's 100 cash payouts on that one win. So depending on how much you have of a certain team, you can win money every week just off them getting wins.
How would you have liked to bought Cavalier stock at the beginning of this season?
Oh, man. That's a good...
Do you know where they were at the beginning?
I don't know where they were at the beginning.
If I had to guess, Cavalier stock would have been insanely super low.
Cheap. Yeah.
And now, I mean, it's going to be slow. And as the season goes on and we keep winning, mm-hmm. knock on wood, it's going to skyrocket. Especially if we make the playoffs. Man, if you guys are Cavs fans, go watch the Cavs. They're super fun to watch.
Or just NBA fans. Well, yeah, watch the Cavs. But, I mean, if you're NBA fans, go play Symbol.
Yeah. They got NBA, NCAA, NFL. Obviously, we're partial to the NFL here, but they got all the sports you could ever imagine. The dogs.symbol.app. Check it out. The stock market for sports, promo code DAWGS, DAWGS.
And football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game. Let me clear my throat right there. But with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point is scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. So if the sportsbook is not yet available in your state, you can still get in on the NFL action. If you're like me and you are in absolutely no championships in fantasy football this year, I still play fantasy every week on the DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports app. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long. You can play into the playoffs, Super Bowl, Pro Bowl stuff. It's awesome. I love DraftKings Daily Fantasy, so check that out. They're giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with your first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TPPN. Bet just $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score using promo code TPPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. You must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right.
So we got a voicemail we wanted to get into. Patreon member Derek Frisbee. If you're a fan of him, check him out on YouTube, DF Sports.
Yep.
He sent this in a couple weeks ago about Baker.
What's up, guys? I just wanted to share a couple thoughts on the whole Baker conversation from last episode or a couple episodes ago, whenever it was. Blake, you know you're my guy, but you might not like me on this one. I don't know. We'll see. But listen, I think that Baker has NFL starting quarterback talent. I think his arm strength and his accuracy, even though it's been a little bit shoddy recently, I think when he's at his best, he's definitely an NFL starting quarterback. My problem with Baker is the mental side of thing. It's what's inside his head that I have a problem with. I think when you look at Mac Jones and you ask the question, why has he been so successful? It's because he knows where he's supposed to go with the football. He can read defenses. He understands the offense. I think Baker, maybe it's a product of the multiple coaches, but at this point, normally you would see that getting better with these young quarterbacks. My concern with Baker, it still seems to come back to haunt him. I don't know if it's injuries or what that makes him think different, but my problem with Baker is not his talent, it's his mind. I think mentally he is just not there, and I think that's a big problem. And the Browns, in my opinion, must go out and get a good backup. I don't think Case Keenum is a good backup. I think you got to look at a Mitch Trubisky, Marcus Mariota, somebody like that, maybe a Taylor Heineke. You got to challenge Baker.
I really agree with the whole mental aspect thing that Derek is pointing out there. Do you guys ever feel when you're watching a Browns game like Baker Mayfield is in control of the offense?
No, I feel like I was saying these things a long time ago, and
you were getting crapped on.
You know, and I agree with him too. I've said this before that I think physically Baker has one of the better arms in the NFL. When people say he doesn't have a strong arm, they're just not paying attention. He's got to be a hater. Yeah, he's got a rocket arm.
Yeah.
I do think his size hurts him. Injuries are starting to pile up now. He had rib problems last year. Was there something 2 years ago?
He had that thumb issue, right?
Yeah. And then this year getting banged up. small guys who get hit, they tend to break easier. And I think he has a really hard time seeing passing lanes. What made Drew Brees so good is he became like a master of standing on his tippy toes and somehow seeing passing lanes.
You kind of noticed it with him, and I see it a lot with Russell Wilson, who's also very short. They create windows in the pocket. They kind of know where to get.
Yeah, the pocket presence of those guys is elite.
Yes.
And that's why they go down. Those two are, I mean, Russell Wilson, I know he struggled, but he's going to go down as one of the better quarterbacks, especially for that height of all time.
Yes.
Not just, you know, off this decade of all time. And same thing with Drew Brees. And I agree that those two were a better pocket passer, and they just have, like you said, Josh, that presence in the pocket that where we like Baker, we're like, you got to roll him out so he can see, you know, what's open. You got to always, you know, bootlegs and play action so he can drop 10 yards deep into the backfield to be able to see who's open.
You know, I was just thinking they were talking about Nick Chubb and his stance in the backfield when he, you know, before they run a play, and it almost looks like he's standing straight up, and he basically is. Do you guys hear all them talking about that? Yep. He just puts his hands on his thighs and just stands there. Most guys kind of like bend their knees, kind of get in position. He said he likes to stand straight up because he can see over the offensive line and see the defense before the play starts.
Mm-hmm.
So he's even navigating the pocket to fit him.
Right. When you guys are talking about pocket presence, I think Baker, he has almost none.
Yeah,
you ever watch? He creates pressure a lot by he'll like roll right into somebody or run right into somebody. His presence is he panics, and this goes to what Derek was saying. I keep wanting to call him DF. this goes to what Derek was saying is he panics mentally. I think that's his biggest weakness. If he was better mentally, could he maybe adjust to some of this stuff? Probably. But a rocket arm, ask Jamarcus Russell what a rocket arm gets you. You know what I mean? It doesn't really get you much. And I think mentally,
first overall.
And you see, you heard things from his rookie year where people were saying he's a run one read quarterback. And we know, and we kind of said, no, he's not. And now you're still hearing those things 3-4 years later. There's been almost no progression. He's actually gotten worse.
Yeah, it's definitely been a roller coaster ride, right? So, like, rookie year, we were like, okay, threw a lot of interceptions, but you were like, man, it's there. If we can just eliminate the turnovers, like, you can see that, like, Baker could be the guy.
Right, he had the fire, the passion, the drive. Like, I mean, he was making throws, but then again, we hadn't really had anybody to watch to make throws.
Right, and then the next year we had the Freddie Kitchens thing. So, we kind of gave him a pass, right, because we were like, that offense was terrible. Okay, then we got last year, played super well, especially down the stretch. And, I mean, we talked about it early on in that season last year of, like, I think we've always called it, like, his happy feet. Or, like, he was always, you know, panicking, like you said, in the pocket. And then towards the end of the year, it was like, all right, whatever they've done, they've kind of fixed it for that 9-game stretch or what it was in the second half of the year. Now, this year, it's kind of reverting back to those same things that we kind of questioned at the start of last year, and nothing's trended forward. So now, is it injury related where he's afraid of, like, I can't get hit because if I get hit one more time, I'm done?
He still scrambles and runs, though.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's one of those things. The biggest thing that Baker, so, like, I've obviously followed Baker since he was at Oklahoma, and he's always been, like, that underdog, and we talk about, like, all that chip on the shoulder, and that's, like, kind of where he's always thrived, right? Because he was, like, counted out. He was a walk-on in college, and then he ended up becoming a college star. Then he's a number one draft pick, and then went to the Browns, and they're, like, they're not a good team, and he's been this underdog, like, this whole time. And then last year, coming into this year, I think everybody was like, oh, Baker, you know, he's kind of like a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Can you imagine, like, a guy like Baker, how big his head was, you know, and ego-wise, like, coming into this year thinking, like, all it is up from here, and then you come out, and the NFL doesn't work that way for a lot of people. You know, we've seen this in the past where a couple quarterbacks will have, like, a really good year, and then it's like, oh, well, they figured out that you can't do the exact same stuff the year before. It only works for the all-time greats. Tom Brady's and Drew Brees and those like generational quarterbacks can do the same things year in year. That's how good they are. But a lot of times you got to reconfigure and do some different things.
Well, when a team figures out that all you can do is like roll out, they're going to take away the rollout.
Right. Yeah. That's my biggest thing is in our offense, and whether that's Baker or Stefanski, I'm not blaming Stefanski for this, of just got to adapt. Like, defenses are always going to take away what you do best. So you're going to have to get better at what you're not good at.
And he's not.
Right. So and that, we haven't seen that this year.
That'll bring me to the last thing I want to talk about in this episode. We didn't touch on it yet. Where do you then put the blame for the final drive in this game? Because a lot of people are talking about Stefanski. And I just can't wrap my head around the fact that there's people who actually think Stefanski's the problem. I cannot wrap my head around that. People want to talk about how are you going to throw Baker away? He's the first quarterback to win, yada, yada, yada. How are you going to throw Stefanski away? He's the first coach in my life who's ever been competent.
So break it down what people are complaining about at the end of the game.
They're saying we didn't run. We should have just kept running the ball every play of the last drive.
So how... Remind me, because I don't remember exactly how much time was on the clock when we had the ball.
I don't know. I don't remember exactly.
Because I, for me, okay, so I, let me just preface this and say I never said this Stefanski was the problem in any of this, mm-hmm. but it did kind of strike me as odd. Just like last week, I, you know, looking back against the Raiders, we ran the ball when we needed a first down when we couldn't run the ball all night. This week, we threw the ball when we needed to move the ball when we couldn't throw the ball all night. We were running it. You know, Chubb had over 7 yards a carry.
Yeah, so we had the ball there in the fourth quarter at the 50-yard line, 1 minute left, all three timeouts. And we went first and 10 pass to Njoku. Should have been caught.
Now you say it was
not should have been caught. Should have been a complete pass.
And it was only a minute left, right?
There was a minute left.
Okay, I thought it was
longer. That play took 6 seconds off the clock. Incomplete pass. Second and 10. Looking for Dearness Johnson.
On the screen.
Found the D lineman right in the chest.
Threw right to D lineman. Incomplete pass. And then obviously we know what happened on third and 10.
You threw a pick. So here's my thing. You're not going to just run the ball in true clock so Chris Nagar can kick a 50-yard field goal. One, he had already missed one. Two, he's your practice squad kicker who doesn't have any game action except for the other field goal he missed earlier in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the plan is he calls that play for Njoku on first down. If he catches that, or he didn't drop it, if Baker can just make a standard basic NFL throw and hits Njoku anywhere that he can catch it, it is Brown's ball at like the 20-yard line or something like that. Now, I still think you're trying to score, but now you can get more conservative in your play calling as far as, well, we'll run the ball, and if we don't break it for a touchdown, now this is at least a chip shot field goal.
And you should be able to rely. It doesn't matter if he's a practice squad guy. If he's your kicker, I mean, come on, a kicker's a kicker. You should be able to make your chip shot field goals.
Yes.
Like you're saying.
And so, but then he misses that one completely. So now it's second and 10. So he's like, we can either run the ball, but if I don't get anything here, it's third and 10 now. So I'm going to call essentially a run play. It's an extension of the run game is the screenplay, and it's set up perfectly.
Oh, perfectly. I mean, you're getting a first down.
Yes.
If he completes that.
And he throws it right to the Packers defensive lineman, almost pick six, mm-hmm. literally throws it right to him. You're definitely not running it on third and 10.
Right.
If he runs it on third and 10 and we don't get it, could you imagine the storm that would be coming down? So then he calls another pass that is wide open. So how are you going to blame Stefanski when he called essentially three perfect plays? He called a play that had a wide open Njoku, a screen pass that was set up perfectly wide open, and then another play that was wide open for Donovan Peoples-Jones.
So for me, whenever I hear these other fans and people saying, like, should have run the ball, gotten close enough to kick a field goal, and you're saying, why would you want to put all that pressure and put the game in your practice squad kicker's hands? What does that say that the fans are saying, just run the ball and get close enough? We trust our practice squad kicker more than we trust our first round quarterback.
Those fans are the same ones who are going to yell at me for dissing on Baker.
I know.
But they wanted us to take the ball out of his hand.
That's what I'm saying. They don't realize that they're even saying, without realizing it, that they don't trust him.
Yeah. And people are like, well, why would you... you're the same people telling me that he's the guy. So you don't want him making that throw?
And you're right. I mean, it's not like Stefanski drew up three stupid bonehead pass plays that were just like, why would you call that?
They were all wide open.
Yeah. All they needed to do was be executed.
Yes, they were wide open.
Okay, so, and man, that's going to really bug me. I was over here and I'm trying, as I'm listening to you guys, I'm trying to find the picture, right, of that play. So on that play, I can't remember the wide receivers. One probably had to be Jarvis, and it was either DPJ or Higgins, I'm sure, which Higgins finally, like, came out of nowhere and I thought actually had a decent game of making, you know, like old reliable, old faithful, of making some big catches and big spots. But on that play with Njoku, where we threw it to him on the sideline, he was going out and then kind of went out 15 yards or whatever it was and then just went straight for the sideline. We actually had two other wide receivers running the same. They ran the same route. They ran like 10 yards and then went to the middle of the field. Both of them wide open on the play. Wide open. Like the easier throw and everything. So if I find that picture and show it to you guys, you're going to be – it's crazy that I'm pretty sure it was Jarvis that was open in the middle of the field. That would have been open and probably runs for 15 yards after the catch.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So, yes, could we have possibly – but you're not calling – at the same time, like, this guy's supposed to be your franchise quarterback. People are yelling and screaming that he's a franchise quarterback. So my play caller should be able to call any play in his playbook and trust that his number one overall pick quarterback can go out and make what is a standard NFL throw. I mean, that throw to Njoku – ugh, that was bad. My God, that was bad.
I found it. So I'm just going to show you Jarvis over the middle of the field there. That's just wide open right in the middle of the field.
And he's looking at him.
I mean, when you see that picture and like, so because it was like people want to say that about Stefanski. And on that play, it's a genius play call that you have two wide receivers that are trailing each other. So you can see like Jarvis.
Yeah,
and
he could hit DPJ here too. Because
yes, that's coming right behind him,
the
right?
The safety's on running with Jarvis.
Yeah,
so the corner's trying to turn and run with DPJ's open too.
So you had two guys in the middle of the field just standing there. I mean, that if they throw that, what's that put the ball? Probably at the 45 when they catch it? Something like that, 45.
If he hits Jarvis and Schreid, he's running.
And he's probably getting what? Would you say like a 25-yard gain at least before somebody's tackling him?
Yes.
And you call a timeout, you're looking at, you probably play was ran with like a minute left, so you're looking at having 42 seconds by the time you call a timeout. Man, what kind of position you, I mean, all of a sudden Green Bay's thinking, well, we're going to have to start calling our timeouts.
Right.
In that scenario. Right. It's crazy when you look at things like that.
And that's the thing, too. If we just start running the ball and say they stuff it and we have to settle for that long field goal and they start popping timeouts.
Then they get the ball and Aaron Rodgers is known for going down and getting a field goal.
Give Aaron Rodgers 30 seconds.
I mean, we let Derek Carr do it.
Yeah, you can't blame Stefanski. He literally schemed a play with three wide open people.
No, I guess I understand the, well, why didn't we just try to run it there mentality? I get that, but it does make sense why we did. It makes clear sense why we did not. And it's not like we said, it didn't call stupid plays.
No, I mean, be good.
Just be a little bit good.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's 25th in QBR. He's got 15 touchdowns, 11 picks. He only has 2,825 yards on the season. I mean, there's a chance. He's probably going to end this season at like 3,100 maybe, unless he goes crazy in one of these games. 3,100 in the year 2021 in the NFL?
Yeah.
Missing two games. Technically missing one game.
Yeah.
One game because of...
There's an extra game.
But yeah, I mean, it is crazy. I mean, I think everybody, if you're a Browns fan and you think that Baker doesn't need to play better, you can, you know, be a Baker guy and still... You can be on Baker's side and still think... You got to play better.
So you gave the stat before the show. We'll just leave everybody on a high note.
Yeah.
When was the last time that a Browns quarterback threw four picks in a game.
Oh, let me read these quarterbacks real quick. We'll end the show on this. Something for you guys to sleep on. So QBs to start for the Browns since 2013. Baker, Brian Hoyer, DeShone Kizer, Josh McCown, Jason Campbell, Johnny Manziel, Brandon Whedon, Cody Kessler, Robert Griffin, Tyrod Taylor, Austin Davis, Case Keenum, Kevin Hogan, Connor Shaw, Nick Mullins. All those guys have started games for the Browns since 2013. This is the list of the quarterbacks who have thrown four interceptions for the Browns in that time span. Baker Mayfield.
And who was so the a name on that list was the last person on the Browns to throw four interceptions in a game, and it was back in 2012. Do you know which guy it was?
Was it who?
Brandon Whedon.
It was Brandon Whedon.
Yeah. Nice. So, high note.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah.
So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up because I could go off on a tangent now and I'm not going to.
And we probably will in the after hours. So if you're not in the after hours, make sure you
check it out.
Subscribe.
Come on. It's not that much. Come on. You spend more every month on coffee. Spend more every day on coffee.
For sure. It's a ton of fun too, guys. I'm not just lying. It really is. So check it out. So we're going to wrap this thing up. Thanks for checking out another episode. Browns somehow still alive in this thing. Make sure you guys check out our preview episode for the Steelers game, the biggest Steelers game of Baker's life, possibly coming up this coming Monday. Hopefully you guys subscribe to the Patreon. Check us out on After Hours. Let us know what you think in the comments, and we'll see you guys all in a few days.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Dogs Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter at the Dogs Podcast, and become an official Dog Pack member and join the dogs.com.